anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Yeah, it's Flames Talk on this Tuesday, October 8th. The NHL regular season officially started over the weekend in North America. It's officially started on this Tuesday, and for the Flames, it starts Wednesday night in Vancouver as Calgary tries to shock the hockey world in some minds and be a whole lot more competitive than some on the outside are thinking they're going to be. Lots to get into from a Flames standpoint and more as we say hello to our buddy Frank Saravalli. It's time for our Tuesday NHL Insider brought to you by our friends at South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff and DailyFaceoff.com. He joins us from Salt Lake City, Utah, where the Utah Hockey Club is set to make their NHL debut later on this Tuesday night. It's good to have you in my backyard, Frank. How are we doing?
Back again. Let's go. Just ready for hockey. It's time. Felt like a marathon long preseason as usual. And this atmosphere tonight in Salt Lake City it's going to be electric.
Yep, I'm looking forward to seeing how it comes through on television, and we'll dive in on some expectations for Utah and all that type of stuff as we move on. But I wanted to start with this because this week over at Daily Faceoff, you published your 32 bold predictions for the coming year, and if you go read it, nothing involving the Calgary Flames. So, and that's why I thought, well, it was a good way to start. Do you have any bold Flames predictions? Do you have anything that might qualify in that same vein going into a new year for the team in this city?
I mean, not really, because I would have found a way to make it one of the 32. But I think my answer is I believe Connor Zary transitions to star status in the NHL. And what that looks like, can he get to 70 points? Can he get to 75? It's a big leap from where he was last year. But I think if you're the Calgary Flames this year, like, is it a bold prediction to say that this team could be more competitive than many realize? I mean, maybe, maybe not. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to get a team that's going to work. They're going to compete. There's certainly going to be limited in talent compared to other teams most nights. But anything and everything about this season for the Flames should be, how can we best support our young players and how can we continue to provide as much opportunity and room for growth? And frankly, that should be the mindset from all of the vets as well, that it's not really about you and looking out for yourself and looking out for your games where you're out to get cake and points. It's about making sure that you're helping everyone kind of all push in the same direction.
Yeah. And I mean, the Zary one's really interesting because he's had himself a nice preseason. Obviously, he was a real breakout player for the team last year, and I'm curious as to how he's used. He's starting on a line with Backlund and Coleman, but I wonder if that changes even as the early season goes along for one of their already, Frank, as he goes into his second NHL season. Zary already one of their most dynamic offensive players, and there's really not even any debate on that point.
Well, no, and that's the thing. Like, it's going to be up to him now because there's going to be eyeballs on him. I'm talking about him. Teams are, I'm sure, going to be keying in on him. He's going to be more of a focal point. But I think there's probably an opportunity here, especially in the first part of the season, to maybe catch some people sleeping. And yeah, I'm really excited to see him take that next step.
What I'm just curious as to how you, from maybe more of a 40 or 60 foot view, have seen the discourse when it comes to Jacob Pelche and his future with the Flames. There was a lot of hand wringing in this market going into Sunday as to whether or not the Flames would place their 2019 first round pick on waivers or not. They did. He cleared, and he's been assigned to the American Hockey League. So in some ways, it was much ado about nothing. But I'm just curious as to your perspective and view on that discourse and kind of what your observations were.
Well, I think first thing is a universal truth, and this is not directed toward Flames fans. This is like quite literally the entire league. Every market overvalues its own young players.
Yep.
That's one. That's a universal truth, okay? So any Flames fan sitting there that's a little riled up with me saying that, I would say it in any market about any team and any fan base at any time. So that's one. Two, I think the tougher part is trying to understand and view that decision and decision-making process through the exact prism which we were just talking about, which is exactly what the goal and direction of this season is, which is how do we put our young guys in the best position to succeed. Now, part of that is also on the player. Like, you've got to come in and earn it. You know, they're not making that decision. They probably were leaning going into, hey, let's find a way to get this guy on our team. And in some ways, there were some bright spots, and probably in some other parts, maybe some stuff that's lacking. So the fact that he cleared in a period of time when other players were claimed, it just gives you some indication of a stock check of, you know, how teams around the league view him, which is probably not all that different than where the Flames see him right now.
And then the other interesting name, and you and I have had some talks about goaltending throughout. They did put Devin Cooley on waivers, and they did end up sending him to the American Hockey League, which was not a reflection on what they thought of his camp. They thought that Cooley had a really strong first camp, but didn't want to be in a situation where they were rocking with three goaltenders, and didn't want to be in a situation where they had too many blue liners in the American League. So that's why I think a part of the reason anyway why Cooley gets put on waivers. But and I know there was a little bit of nervousness about whether or not he would clear, but with I think it was 11 other goalies on waivers on Sunday, he was able to get through.
Yeah, so there's two schools of thought. Either you try and sneak him through on a day where there's a ton of guys available, which is, you know, kind of always the Sunday before rosters and camp rosters open and camp breaks, or you hang on to him for 3, 4, 5 weeks, you run with three goalies, and then you kind of wait until everyone else has solidified their roster, which ask the Red Wings, ask the Canadiens last year. That doesn't always happen with some injuries to start the year. And sometimes you get stuck longer. So I understand their thought process. I think three goalies is a really tough spot for everyone involved. There's never enough work, never enough nets. There's always someone that is kind of unhappy with their lot, depending on how the schedule looks. And it's really not probably the best course of action for Dustin Wolf moving forward. I think if you're ready to make that transition and have him seize a bigger role, And by the way, Vladar had a good camp.
Yes.
Then this is the time to do it, I think, if that's what your organizational pecking order looks like. And none of that's a shot to Cooley. If you've listened to us all preseason long, you will have known how much you and I have talked about Cooley in such a positive light in terms of how the Flames view him moving forward. So I still think there's some plans for him, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if at some point Dan Vladar is on the move, that they'd be ready to run with Wolf and Cooley for a bit.
Yep. Yeah, and if somebody gets hurt, they'll be more than confident in bringing Cooley into the fold as well. So last question I'd ask you on the Flames, and we kind of touched on it already, but I it's kind of a good way to wrap it in a bow, Frank. Flames finished 17 points back of a playoff spot last year, and you know, a lot of that had to do with the players that they traded away. They've been able to recoup some bodies in the offseason, but 17 points back of a playoff spot last year, are they closer or further away from that this year in your mind?
Well, with the players that have gone out the door between now and then, and yeah, I know, like, there's still the trade deadline and part of the chunk of the year that they finished, it's hard to argue that they're closer because they still could have banked more at the beginning last year.
Right.
That said, I don't know that there has been a major sea change in that, because I am expecting some juice from Zary and from some of the young guys that I think end up driving you. You're going to see teams, especially teams that have more vets, teams that have bigger expectations. I was talking, you know, I'm here in Utah. I was talking to Utah GM Bill Armstrong yesterday, and he was saying how he thinks the young guys that you have on a team, they drive you while everyone else is just kind of slowly easing their way into the season. And so I do think the Flames might be able to get a bit of a pump from that. And more than that, one big thing that I'd key in on this year is I'd like to see at least some better vibes around the team, if that makes any sense. There was so much noise, so many players unsure of their status moving forward. And frankly, I think a few guys that have been disappointed with sort of the way things have played out, that I'm hoping that people have had a chance, the guys on the team have had a chance to flush some of that and go into this season with a clear state of mind that might make for a healthier environment for everyone.
Okay. It's Frank Saravalli. That's the Flames portion of our chat with Frank Saravalli, Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com. He joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. In your bold predictions piece, you're calling it the Oilers winning the Stanley Cup. They're the team that's breaking the drought, hey?
Honestly, looking at everyone else's predictions, I'm not entirely sure how bold that was. Yet, here we are in a position where, think about all the times that a Canadian team should have ended the drought. Oilers in Game 7, Flames 2004 Game 7. I mean, like, how many times over the years, Canucks Game 7, 2011, like, yep. You'd think at least one of these games, just one, let alone the entire series, might have gone a different way. So, yeah, that is still a thing. And to me, I truly believe that watching Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and watching the, you know, especially the clips and stuff from behind the scenes with the Amazon Prime series Face Off, it feels like a matter of when and not if. Like, I just don't see that driven of an athlete that good being denied. And I know it's a team sport, but I also think the Oilers have done a better job this summer, maybe not on the back end, but certainly up front, surrounding these guys with more depth than they've ever had. So I do like the Oilers to win the cup. I think the West has tons of options. I also think being in the Pacific this year is probably a pretty good place to start charting your path to a cup final, because I think there's a pretty sizable gap between the Oilers and probably whoever else they might play in the first and second round.
You're also liking the New Jersey Devils. Hey, did I see that right? Sheldon Keefe, the Jack Adams Award winner on one of your bold predictions.
I love the changes that the Devils made. first off, let's start with the Calgary angle in that Jacob Markstrom, in tandem with Jake Allen, I think the Devils, for the first time in Tom Fitzgerald's tenure, have solved their goaltending. They've got every night a chance to win all 82 games with those two guys healthy. Then you look at their back end, and last year it was a combination of Dougie Hamilton being out for the majority of the year with the torn pec muscle, but also just because of that, everyone was asked to do too much. You know, you had Luke Hughes, who still had 47 points last year as a rookie, which is pretty impressive. Simone Nemitz, a hugely talented defenseman. They were asked to take on way too much as, you know, first and second year players in the league. Now they're better balanced. They've got the defense that's added certainly some support. You know, you've got Pesci, you've got Brendan Dillon. Like, they've totally changed the look of that. And then up front, they've had the sort of standout stars. Jack Hughes, you know, needs to stay on the ice and stay healthy, but the offense, you know, should certainly be in a better position now to succeed. So I really like the Devils. I have them winning the Metro, and I think Sheldon Keefe is a pretty driven guy in terms of what he can push this team to achieve, and I think it's going to help him being out of the bubble in Toronto.
Sabres back in the playoffs too?
That one might be one of the bolder ones that I had. And I just, for me, I look at it through the lens of what is your back end look like? How does your defense help drive you and push you as the backbone of your team? And pound for pound, I mean, I think that top four that they have in Buffalo is as good as anyone else in the East. And I got some heat, just the top four, but I got some heat from people on social media, among other things that I got some heat for yesterday, that was really basically saying, you really think Buffalo's defense is that good? And I'm going, Rasmus Dahlin, Owen Power, Bowen Byram, and Matthias Samuelsson. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm putting that up against the Boston Bruins with Charlie McAvoy and Hampus Lindholm, Brandon Carlo, and Nikita Zadorov. They may not be as big, but I think I'd from a top-end perspective, I'd actually take Buffalo's over with Dahlin and Power over McAvoy and whoever else you want to throw in there. So I think on the strength of their defense, the Sabres, you know, they need to just find a way to score. Coming home from Prague without any points and only two goals in two games doesn't help a narrative for a team that struggled to score last year. But I think Buffalo's in way better shape, and that also means someone needs to come out. And at some point, whether it's this year or next or in the near future, it's the number for the Tampa Bay Lightning is going to be called. I may just be a year ahead of time.
Okay. Hey, just a couple more for you, Frank. Boston and Jeremy Swayman do end up getting it done before the start of the regular season, and it had to turn bad before it got to its inevitable conclusion. How did we get here? How did it finally get agreed upon with the Bruins and Swayman on that 8-year deal?
It's one of those ones that the Bruins and the Swayman camp are probably asking themselves this week, because I don't know about you, but looking at it from 30,000 feet, you know, even just I was texting with GMs around the league. They'd say, hey, where do you think this Swayman thing is going to end up? And like, even going back to early September, I was saying, just feels like an inevitable 8 times 8.25. And that's where it did. But to get to that point, the Bruins had to be pushed. And Swayman had to be pushed. I think the Bruins had no designs on even getting to 8 times 8. And this was a grind. But I think in the end, even if there were some hurt feelings for a few days, this was probably a necessary course for the Bruins to set up this backbone of their team in net, because the strength of that team has really been on their goaltending the last few years. Part of it with the structure they have in front of them, but also because Swayman and Olmark had been so good. And with Olmark gone, they're now pretty well positioned with a 25-year-old for the next 8 years. That just kind of seems to make sense. And it feels like a lot for Swayman, I'm sure, for a lot of people seeing that number. But percentage of cap-wise, it's actually less than what Tuukka Rask signed for a while ago.
How does this all impact Igor Shesterkin now, Frank, and some conversation surrounding what that contract may or may not look like with the Rangers?
Well, it certainly provides some support for Shesterkin to say to the Rangers, hey, the dynamic in terms of how teams are paying their goaltending, it was swinging a long way toward teams' favor for a while. I mean, think about Carey Price signed that deal a while ago. And then since then, you had Vasilevsky, you know, arguably the best in the game. He signs for sub $10 million. And then Hellebuck with multiple Vezinas, he signs for sub $9 million. And so Swayman kind of pushes the envelope a bit and pushes that number up. I think the tough part for the Rangers and Shesterkin is, I can confirm for you the reporting out there from Kevin Weeks today. The Rangers did put 8x11 out there, $88 million. That's been rejected. And they are perfectly comfortable, obviously, making Shesterkin the highest paid goalie in the league, actually in history. But they have limits. They're not going much further than that. Mm-hmm. I don't see them getting to a 12. They feel like they need to keep it to a somewhat manageable or reasonable number to continue to have a championship team around him. And he will get probably 12 or 12 plus on the open market. I think the big question is, how much does he really need to stay in New York?
Yeah. I'm fascinated to see how this Shesterkin story evolves with that 8x88 on the table and rejected by the Shesterkin camp. Last one, set us up for Utah, man. You're there in Salt Lake. We're talking on Tuesday afternoon, and then Tuesday evening is the first ever game played in Salt Lake. In that building. Just give us a little bit of a scene set as the Utah Hockey Club are about to become a thing.
Well, I'm looking out my window here at the hotel, and I'm looking directly at Delta Center. The street is closed off, and fans are beginning to flood this sort of plaza out here for a pregame concert and celebration. This town they're jacked up. From a pure business perspective, it's already been a roaring success. They had one preseason game in this building, and they narrowly missed on beating the all-time Utah Jazz merchandise sales record for one night,
okay.
A preseason game.
All right.
So that gives you some indication of how excited they are. The players, you know, they were talking this morning at Skate about how this is the most excited they've ever been for a hockey game at any level. So there's just something about being new, fresh, brand new building. And I also think from a league perspective, how critically important this is. The NHL no longer has 31 and a half teams. They have 32. Mm-hmm. And with all due respect to whatever the intentions were in Arizona, that wasn't it. This is now a full-fledged, real deal NHL team with no excuses. And I also think they have a pretty good team that they're going to put on the ice this year. I have Utah making the playoffs, and I think this Utah team is really well positioned for now and the future. Tons of cap space, picks, more prospects than they can sign. They're going to be the envy of the league for a little bit.
Enjoy it tonight, hey. Have fun at the home opener, and we'll talk to you on Tuesday. Travel back home safe, but good to catch up as always, Frank. Thanks for doing this, hey.
Thanks, Pat. Have a good one.
He's Frank Saravalli. He is our Daily Faceoff NHL Insider. He joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk, and he joins us, as always, brought to you by our friends at South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com.